This is A Walk in the Black Forest. We'd just like to take a minute of silence in memoriam at the death of radio, because we've got nothing else to fucking talk about.
The following program contains strong language, left-wing political comment, and offensive line.
The hills are alive with the sound of music.
Alles einsteigen, bitte! Hirn schließen! Das Blumenpflücken für der Fass ist verboten!
State of war would exist soonest. This country is at war.
I, your leader, will see you safely through to a better world! And now, a walk in the Black Forest.
Well, hello and welcome to this exclusive A Walk in the Black Forest web-only, DRM-free content on the thing.
No numbers, no versions, mofo.
That's
Peace
right.
Out.
On today's show, this Peace particular out. Episode, out. Running out of time, this particular episode, it is our US election update 2008.
Double penetration.
That's right. You've been waiting for it. We've been waiting for it. And we're very excited to present to you this A Walk in the Black Forest web-only exclusive edition. Well, it's not, because it'll be on the show next week. So not really at all, is it?
No.
Did I leave?
Yeah.
I'll go now.
Now, live from the studios of A Walk in the Black Forest, US Election Special 2008, Double Penetration.
It was a good gag, and I'm glad you.
It was funny in production.
It was very funny, and even funnier in rehearsals.
Yeah,
and then in the dress rehearsal, it was really, really funny. Yep. But it's lost it since then.
Right.
I don't know why. This is A Walk in the Black Forest, ladies and gentlemen. Election Special 2008, Double Penetration.
Now, if you wonder where we are currently three rows down from where Wolf Blitzer and the CNN team are.
Yes.
So we're broadcasting live. Well, recording this live, because we're not broadcasting live.
Exactly.
We're recording this live from the Tally Centre. Wolf Blitzer's over that way.
Anderson Cooper's over there getting his hair done.
Excuse me.
Yep.
Anderson Cooper.
AC360
is over there. Yep. And Katie Couric's just down the back, blowing John McCain. Well, I can't say it didn't start well.
When we got here tonight, Abe goes, now you're under strict instructions not to say certain things. And I must admit, in Abe's defence, that's not one of the things he said you can't say.
Exactly. Anyway, so yes, of course, as we know, the American election is done and
signed,
dusted,
sealed and delivered.
I'm yours.
Now,
tell you what, it's been a long time pushing Barack Obama.
It has been. It's just been continually...
Most people just didn't get it, Pete.
No, I'm not going down that line, because you two, on last evening's show, which you can get from our website, www.walkbyforest.org...
is this a retrospective 15-minute plug for last week?
No, it is. You two joined together to diss me. So I'm not going to give you that opportunity again.
Okay.
And I'm not going to even address those issues.
Now, of course...
So let's go...
Because I'm still in therapy.
This has been a long time coming. This is the election victory we had to have. Kevin Rudd won the last election victory he had to have. This is the next one. This sees the end to the usual power shift that's been on in America for some time. So you've got the Bushes.
Yep.
We've got Reagan. We have Clinton. We have those. Really, they're all part of the same kind of...
Washington insiders.
They are Washington insiders. Now the revolution has come. Fight the power.
Bloody Clintons.
Yeah, I can't trust them.
Mm-hmm. I like the black glove, by the way.
Or as Obama said, it's been 221 years in the making.
It has been 221 years in the making. What's really interesting, I was talking to a guy at work today.
Were you?
I was.
See, what you don't understand is generally Pete eats his lunch on his own.
I do, because no one will sit with me. It's very sad. I was sitting there talking to a guy at work
today. What about your Holmes?
My Holmes? No, they stay away from me.
Oh, right?
Yeah, it's just, you know, so there's some sort of legal distance they've got to be away from me. So in talking to them today, and I was saying to them, isn't it amazing, you know, I can actually have... two amazingly stunning victories in the space of 1 year. Oh, it's fantastic.
Mm. Yeah.
John Howard, gone. George W. Bush, almost gone.
See, John who?
Exactly right. Yeah,
exactly right.
Yeah, George W. Bush, who?
Who?
What? Where?
As we were discussing earlier.
Well, no one will know who he is, because we're all going to have our memories collected.
John McWho?
Well, exactly. You know that, of course, that in true Men in Black style, all of us will have our memories wiped of Dick Cheney.
Yes.
We won't know who he is after January. It's all gone.
This is the only historical record of who Dick Cheney actually is.
Exactly. I think Dick Cheney,
and he's a tool.
If anyone does remember him, he'll go down in history as the guy who endorsed McCain.
Which Obama took absolute joy in.
Oh,
he
loved every minute of it.
I'd like to congratulate John McCain on his... And he worked hard for it.
Yeah, it was a great line.
So on tonight's show, we're actually going to talk about a few bits and pieces. Obviously things that are, you know, that were missed by the major networks. Mm-hmm. Certainly missed by CNN, certainly missed by MSNBC, CBS. But what
the fact that John McCain won. Now, I don't know why anybody's reported it.
I don't understand why no one's reported it. But what I'd also like to point out is we're actually going to be also continually updating as well. And it's important that we do keep up to date with what's going on in the States. I do realise that as we are in the US, it is about 2 a.m. In the morning, on
Excellent.
The morning of November the 5th, Eastern Time, as we are, because we are in the CNN Media Centre, or the CNN Grill, actually, to be precise, the CNN Grill in New York City.
So it's pretty dark in here. Wish they hadn't turned out the lights.
And all gone home.
Yes.
And all gone
home.
Is that. Which is unfortunate. But look, we will be keeping up to date with what's happening, because Fox News is the one that you need to keep up to date with. You've got to keep up to date with what's going on Fox News, because they've got an inside into the Republican Party.
What's their inside, Pete?
The fact they're all Republicans?
Mm-hmm. That, and the fact that Karl Rove works for them.
Oh, fantastic.
Right.
Which, you know... Yeah, hi, Carl.
So we'll be keeping an update situation on exactly what's happening.
Yes.
Obviously, Fox News set the trend last time.
Yes, they did.
And the time before that.
And particularly in 2000, they called it first.
Yes, they did. In fact, they called it 3 days before the election.
Yeah, exactly
I think
right.
they did pretty well. So we're going to certainly be looking at them as one of our major sources of information.
Yeah, they are, I'm saying, well, Bill O'Reilly, we're going to have him on the line soon.
Or not. No. No, we'll try. So, gentlemen, where do
we
want to start?
We're going to keep him on the line.
We will.
We just won't talk to him. So what I think we'd actually should start with is just for Australians, perhaps, who haven't been getting the exact numbers. They've just been relying on the Daily Telegraph that said, very importantly, that Sophie Monk is very happy that Obama might be president.
So would you like an update, would you?
Yeah, just give us an update. Give me an update.
US election 2008 update.
Nice. Now, the current this is direct from the MSNBC website. Obama currently has 338 electoral college votes. McCain 156. That is I believe by most definitions a fucking landslide.
Yes,
yeah, I would suggest so.
In fact, more so than anyone was really predicting. Very early on, the first results of first started to come in very early this morning, 7 o'clock I think it was.
Yep.
Well, they started to come in this morning. It looked like McCain was doing well. It was 8-3.
It was a landslide the other way. It was 3-1.
Yes, it was really not good. And I'm thinking, this isn't very happy. And then by this afternoon, hello, Sailor.
Hello, Sailor.
What's also important is that Obama,
Katie Carrick says.
Exactly, also won the popular vote, 47,393,202 to 43,009,000,
which is pretty close.
So what was
it? It is very close.
What was that first number again?
47,393,202 to 43,000,000. Actually, this is a bit strange. Oh, no, to 47,393,000 versus 43,000,000. So it's 51-48%.
So, that good at math.
By that figure, 90 million Americans at least voted.
At least 90 million.
That's a third of the population.
That's not too bad.
That's
or at least that's the figures they're telling us.
Yeah. Yes. Now what's really interesting...
Of course, in Florida, another 12 million people voted.
Yeah, exactly. And then we're told that they couldn't.
That's right.
What's really
the more interesting figure is going to be tomorrow what the actual result is when the people turn up tomorrow to vote.
Yes, that's very true. Now there were before I left to come from my hotel here in New York to the CNN Media Center.
Yep.
There were four states that were still in doubt. They were Montana, Missouri, Indiana, and North Carolina.
No, Missouri.
Now Indiana has actually been in doubt.
Since this morning.
Yeah,
it's the second one to pop up, pretty much.
It was, and it's been in doubt ever since. So it's actually been close all the way along. North Carolina, all of those closed ages ago. Montana closed only 3 or 4 hours ago.
I think the guy who calls up and says, "I've got the results from Indiana," and I think he's been taken to hospital, and nobody's really stepped in to take over that phone call.
What I liked though is the change in the voting system, which I thought was really really important, where they imported one from Europe. Where they actually got someone to say, Hello from Montana. We'd like to give you the results of our televote.
It's Eurovision.
Yes. 1 point, Arizona. Yeah. I thought that worked really, really well.
It does work
unfortunately,
well.
Unfortunately, you did get those, like, unfortunately, Estonia actually gave all its votes across to McCain.
And then you had to hear McCain sing.
Yeah, which really...
Which was a bit unfortunate.
It was very unfortunate. Now, in the Senate
and of
race...
course, you know what was really cruel?
Yep.
They made him sing the song, Throw Your Hands in the Air Like You Just Don't Care.
Oh, no.
That was cruel.
Harsh. Now, the Senate race, of course, has the Democrats not picking up the magic number they needed to filibuster-proof the Senate, which they needed 61 seats. They didn't get that. There's still 4 seats undecided, which includes a former Saturday Night Live writer and a comedy author, Al Franken.
Yeah, so isn't that amazing?
In Minnesota.
Which
and
they say he will take.
He will take, but it's going to be a long count to get there. And in the House, pretty much as expected, the Democrats, no seats left, 260 to 175, giving them pretty much the same majority they had under current Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
Now, interestingly enough, there were a number of seats that we were talking about the other day that we needed to look at. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, these are the key seats, everyone, the battleground states. So I've got Colorado with
I've got a better one tonight, though.
Have you?
Yeah, I've got a better one now.
Has it got spikes on it?
To Pete's height.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nice.
Good.
So we've got Colorado.
Yep.
Florida, Iowa, Missouri, Nevada, New Mexico, North Carolina, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Virginia. So they were the ones everyone was saying to look at, particularly Virginia because they've had a rezoning.
Mm. Yep.
So it was one of the big issues. Mm. Now, out of those, Colorado went Democrat, Florida went Democrat, Iowa went Democrat, Missouri and Nevada went Republican.
Yep.
New Mexico went Democrat. North Carolina, as you said, is undecided. Ohio, that's really hard to say. Can they change the name of the state?
Ohio gozaimasu.
Ohio gozaimasu. Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Virginia all went Democrat. So as you can see from that, in the key states, all but two of them, or potentially three with North Carolina, went Democrat. And this is probably really... tribute to the massive amount of people who had enrolled to vote, and some people waiting for 4 and 5 hours in line to vote on a working day.
I know.
These people actually gave up either money, or some may have even given up their jobs just to vote.
I know, and this is the one thing which is interesting. If you're watching, because the American commentators had, and I was following CNN, MSNBC, and CBS. The American commentators had not a lot to talk about, because the reality was, from about an hour after, or less than an hour after the close of the East Coast polls, it was pretty obvious, once Pennsylvania and Ohio were pretty sure, and let's be fair, CNN were calling things at 1 and 2%
They wanted to make headlines, really. They wanted to be the newsmakers.
Now, they had not much to talk about, so basically, you know, you hear Katie Couric on CBS go, you know, what this proves is that this is the greatest democracy in the world, I'm proud to be an American, I'm proud to vote, and that's all they really had to talk about.
Yeah.
But as someone then, as one of the things that I saw on CNN, which I thought was really interesting, this was actually on CNN.com, their live feed rather than the main CNN feed, was the fact that if you showed this democracy to any of the fledgling democracies in the world that America has undertaken regime change in order to bring about democracy, how is it democratic that you have to sit there for 8 hours to wait to vote?
Exactly. In fact, if you may remember during the Cold War, one of the things that they talked about in these Eastern European countries was you have to line up to vote and you have to line up for food.
Yeah.
How's that fair? Hello, America.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, ultimately, as we discussed on the show last night, the idea that in Australia, where it is compulsory to attend, not compulsory to vote, obviously, you can be in and out in 15 minutes.
It is compulsory to vote.
Well, it's you don't actually have to.
You can just fake it.
You can informal. It's not illegal to informal vote, to actually not put anything on.
No, but voting is turning up and getting
your name ticked off. That's true. Although there is an argument as to whether that's compulsory attendance rather than compulsory voting. But it takes 15 minutes. In, out, 15 minutes. In very out, few queues.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're talking a lot less people.
You know that's really annoying, though? The sausage sizzle.
Oh, that always sucks.
It really ruins the whole day.
The white elephant stall? Nah, not my thing.
Dude, where do you go they sell white elephants?
Dundas Public School.
White elephants.
They've got whole rooms in them. They fit in primary school classrooms. You try to sit them on those little, like, you know, what, first and second grade seats?
Yeah, Pete, I actually tried to touch the skin, and I tell you what, little flecks of white came off.
Did it?
Oh, yeah. They're not real white elephants.
I think the kids have painted them.
Oh, isn't that cute?
Bastards.
Can you imagine the kids at school the day before the election?
Part of the problem is they need to just open more polling places.
Yes, totally.
Because they expect nobody to vote.
Yep.
So they have one polling place in the middle of everywhere.
Yep.
They just need more polling places when they, you know, assume more people are going to turn up.
But they've also got the situation where the electoral systems are different in each state.
Yes.
There were some states, I think like Florida, for example, which had 4 pages of elections occurring at the one time, apart from the vote for president and the Senate and the House of Reps, and then all the propositions, then a bunch of local candidates for sheriff and whatever else, because it's the easiest way to ensure high voter turnout on all those more local and state-based positions.
Apparently, Obama is now the sheriff of Oklahoma.
Nice. That's useful.
Yeah. They, look, the people got confused. They went, I'm here to vote.
So they wrote him in.
He's now the sheriff.
They wrote him
in. Which means he can carry a gun and a badge.
Now, I should actually also point out that Ralph Nader and all other third-party candidates together
were scored
under 0.5% of the vote.
The final Nader election run. Yeah.
Because in 2000, at Nader's peak, in some states, he was polling 5 and 6%.
Oh, well, look, if you look at the John Kerry election, he was probably one of the main forces that took...
Ohio.
Well, yeah, and also Florida.
But in most other...
But this is a much different election, you know.
It is a much different election.
I mean, the choice is very clear.
Yep.
You know, a black man against one of the worst presidents that the United States has ever had.
Yep.
I think it's very clear that, you know, people aren't going to sort of vote for minor candidates.
Yeah.
They're either going to vote for the complete change.
But what was fascinating, though, is that Nader sent me a letter today, an email today.
Did he really?
Yeah, he did. And he claimed victory in the only count that matters.
Oh, what's that?
And there was a blind vote done by a bunch of school kids in Indiana.
That's
I think.
Cruel.
No, and they were told nothing about the candidates. They were just told what they stood for, and Nader won by a 57% margin, which, as he said, proves that if the media was taken out of this, he'd be president.
And he wrote the summaries of all the policies.
I think he did, yes.
Yeah.
He's a dick. He really is a dick.
It's not been a great election campaign for Nader, because in reality, this actually was the first time there has been a true choice.
Yes, that's right.
Well, that's what I said.
Yeah, and what's
interesting... Feel free to reiterate what I said in different words.
I'm thinking, personally, that this was the first time it was a true choice.
What do you think,
Richard?
You're probably right, Pete.
Well, yeah.
Thanks, probably Richard. Right.
Feel free to take my ideas.
No worries, I will. I agree with you completely.
Obama.
There's a rule.
Oh, yes. Now, what happened was that, once again, for Australians who haven't been following this, Americans would know this back to front, is that I believe it was CNN made the first call to say that it was...
Wolf! Hey, that's mine! Dude! Never mind.
Is he taking your drinks again?
You can take it.
Bastard.
I know.
Anyway.
Why is he here at 2 o'clock in the morning?
He's got nowhere else to go.
It's actually 3:30. Oh.
Daylight
savings.
Yeah. So, CNN called it. Every other network followed within the space of about 30 seconds. They obviously all were watching each other. They all broke into... Oh, we're just going to break into our commentary now. We're calling the election for Obama.
Well, interestingly enough, the big call was just after he'd taken Florida.
Yep.
In fact, that's when McCain decided to publicly concede, because said if Florida went, then basically that was the end of it.
I thought it was way before that. It was way before Florida. I remember because Florida was still up in the air. It was after Ohio.
Well, apparently, it started initially with CBS and NBC, according to Wise, anyway. It started with CBS and NBC when they'd given Obama the Sunshine State.
Wow.
So, Florida.
So
and at that
CNN,
point,
because
that's
I had the CNN webpage just sitting there constantly all day. And I tell you, Florida wasn't near there. There was about 4 other states when they were suddenly saying Obama claims it.
But what was interesting, I think, and where this probably comes from, is that when he didn't win Pennsylvania, which is the one that he'd spent an enormous amount of time and money to try and score.
Who's he?
McCain.
Thank you.
When he didn't win Pennsylvania, and when McCain didn't win Ohio, the quote that was coming out of the McCain camp was, they don't see a path to victory. I think was almost the exact quote.
Okay.
So that was as close as they were going to get to a concession. They really had to wait till the polls closed in Washington, Oregon, California. They didn't wait till Alaska closed, because who cares?
Exactly.
But they had to wait till those West Coast polls closed, and within 5 minutes, McCain had actually rung Obama and congratulated him, and then...
And so did George W. Bush. George W. Bush rang Obama and said, It's an awesome night. Quote, awesome night. Awesome. Yes. Now, which president or world leader would say to someone, dude, that's totally awesome?
He probably said, it's an awesome night. John, are you there? John?
Yes, awesome night. Here you go. Washington spokesman Dana Perino said...
Dana Perino.
Dana Perino said President George W. Bush phoned Obama to congratulate him on his, quote, awesome night.
Now, the thing can I at this point, I just want to have a brief discussion about George W. Bush.
Who?
Exactly. That's part of the reason why he got elected. Because he's a dildo? When he starts talking by himself, without speechwriters, he sounds like an ordinary, average, everyday American.
Who needs to go back to school.
But that's the thing, and I remember having, I've talked about this on the show before, but I had a discussion with a bunch of Republican voters 3 or 4 years ago, and I asked, and this
where
was just after the 2004
where'd you
election.
Where'd you get the translator from? It can be really difficult.
I know. Yeah. And of course, talking to that prison glass, even harder.
Oh, right.
So, Scooter says hi, by the way.
Hey!
But what was interesting was I said, why did you vote Bush? I was really curious. What made you vote Bush? And he said, because if he was president, it proved that anybody could be. Mm. That it took it out of the fact that you had to be a director of the CIA, that you had to be in Washington for 50 years, that you had to be... Okay, granted, his father was former president, but he was just a governor.
Mm. And he's rich.
Just a governor. But just stinkingly rich.
Yeah, but even so, there's that element of
but
why Clinton...
That.
Even that element of why Clinton... was, once again, a relatively unknown governor. Mm. It was a story I was listening to
so
on...
So since Clinton, he was the first to be elected without the Washington...
They're Republicans, Richard. Oh, okay. So they're Republicans. The other interesting...
You don't see they're smart.
The other thing about...
Folks are dumb where I come from.
The CBS report I thought was also really interesting because it made a point that this is probably the most unknown person to be elected president in over 100 years.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, he's relatively obscure 4 years ago.
Not bad for an Arab.
It's not bad for an Arab.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's going to be the stuff that ultimately political comedians are going to have.
They're going to play on that for years. They will, because obviously it's now parody. Right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It's totally parody, because ultimately none of it worked. The Bill Ayer stuff didn't work. Jeremiah Wright stuff didn't work. None of it worked.
But isn't it interesting how wrong the media actually got it?
Yeah.
Yes, they said he'd win, but no one knew that he'd actually win this amount, because the problem is the media no longer listen to the people, right? Because they're up there in a cloud.
Yeah.
They listen to each other, as is illustrated from your, copying CNN, CBS, MSNBC, whatever. They're not actually listening to people. If they went down and looked at a polling place, which a lot of news organisations, Australia and European ones were, they went down to the lines and they asked every single person in the line who they were going to vote for, and almost every single one said Obama.
So maybe they didn't do it by... state.
Yeah.
Because, if you look at this, by state, by electoral votes, it's an absolute landslide.
But
if you look at the popular vote, it's completely 50-50 pretty much.
Oh, 51-49, exactly right.
Yeah, it was even closer, like earlier in the night.
It was down to about 300,000 earlier in the night. And in fact, there was a period of time that while Obama was ahead on electoral college, was behind on the popular vote, quite early in the piece.
So as far as people, only half the population voted for Obama.
Yeah.
But it's only because of the way the electoral colleges work.
Which is what someone actually said. I was watching Tom Brokaw on MSNBC earlier today, and the point he made is that this has to be fixed. America has to fix this electoral college system because it does not result in a true...
popular president,
popular president. Mm. And it gives way too much authority, and this is where the Republicans have been foolish, we've had 8 years to do this. Mm. It gives the Democrats, in some ways, quite a huge advantage because they control the two most populous states, which of California and New York, which generate an enormous...
But the governor of New York's a Republican,
New York City is
a Republican, the governor of Florida is a Republican.
That's true.
In a landslide.
I know, but what was interesting, of course, is the fact that, like here, the way the state is divided, the booths, the different districts, create a very different pattern to the way governors work. And this is the other thing that was important that Tom Brokaw said, was that the entire process that flowed across the United States is breaking down the red state, blue state thing. Now, obviously, Obama quoted from his 2004 convention speech tonight in his acceptance speech, where he said, there is no red state, there is no blue state, there is only the United States of America. But it's starting to break down. Arizona is a red state with a Democratic governor. Mm. I think the process of the politics, and it's very similar here in Australia, where you've got Kevin Rudd with the highest level of approval of our Prime Minister in decades, yet you have state government falling one by one by one.
Mm.
On the reverse of that, you had John Howard as, you know, the most popular, exactly, the most popular leader of the junta, for 11 and a half years, surrounded by Labor states that were unassailable.
That's right.
The inherent political logic is breaking down.
It should be one person, one vote. That should be the idea. One person, one vote. Full stop, end of story. And no college, no district, no nothing. One person, one vote.
And I think that's something which America needs to look at.
How else would you do it?
Well, the thing with the electorates is, you know, what's important to the people in that part of the country. So, you know, I sort of agree with the electorate system because, you know, what's important to us here in John Howard's electorate may not be important to somebody...
Was not having John Howard.
Somebody living in the middle of the desert or whatever. Yep. So I can understand, you know, how that we have representatives and, you know, they sort of... Whoever gets the majority sort of gets power. But, you know, it's still a flawed system. I agree with you. It's still a flawed system. But, you know, I can see the logic behind it.
It's hard in America, of course, because the president has executive power far and above of congressional power and is not governed by congressional views. And, in fact, in many ways, while Barack Obama is a Democrat, he is technically not the leader of the Democratic Party.
That's right, yes.
And as such, he can actually be... he can overturn Democratic bills in Congress, and on the other hand, with enough of a majority, can have Democratic bills forced through his presidential veto.
You know how we know that? The West Wing.
That's very true.
It happened, I know, I saw it.
Now,
but in theory, anybody could run and become president.
Yes.
They don't necessarily have to hold a current office or anything like that.
No.
I mean, Palin's a good example. She's just a governor.
Yep.
But, you know, she could have become vice president. Is that a good thing? I mean, they keep on saying that, you know, anyone can be to be the president of the United States. Well, I don't want anyone as president of the United States because most of them are idiots.
That's very true. Right? But then again, we had George W. Bush for 8 years.
Yes, and look at us now.
Yeah, exactly right.
World recession, lots of wars, people dying.
Exactly right.
And in a sense, our system is not too bad because, you know, our Prime Minister comes from someone who's already been elected as a representative for an electorate.
Yeah,
so,
exactly right.
I don't know.
We should actually also talk about there was a massive, speaking of the Senate, there was actually a third Senate election this time around. The Democrats were hoping to obviously pick up a filibuster-proof 61 seats in the upper house. They didn't get it. There were a number of, however, really important casualties. And at this point, I'd like to exhort a rather loud woo-hoo that Senator Elizabeth Dole has been kicked out in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the end of the Dole...
the Dole junta.
The Dole junta, that is now gone.
Been around for a long time. Bob Dole...
Exactly right. And also John Sununu from, well-known Senator John Sununu from New Hampshire has been kicked out by Governor Jeanne Shaheen.
Now, interestingly enough, John Sununu has been defeated, but he is coming out with a John Sununu snowshoe.
Yes, exactly right.
Think he'll do well.
There, of course, are still four tight battles, one of which, of course, I mentioned.
Was he in Star Trek?
I think he was, yes. Okay. Yes. The tightest one being, of course, Minnesota, which is the one
she's
where...
She's not that tight.
Where,
she should get,
she should. Where, what's his face? Al Franken is up against the Republican incumbent and may well win.
Now, it's interesting you mention those states because Colorado went Democrat, and this is actually the... let me see here. I'll just read this. Barack Obama won the mountain state of Colorado, which has only voted Democratic once in a presidential election since 1964. That was for Clinton in 1992. Now, they're actually saying it's because of the influx of liberal people from California moving across, but who knows, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting, actually, that George W. Bush took it by 52% to 47% in the last election. So maybe just a trend. It's a trend upward. You know, people are going, okay, let's... You know, change our voting ways. But Colorado, I think, is probably similar to a lot of those states we talked about earlier, where people are just like, We've freaking had it.
Yeah,
we're
going
to enroll to vote. I've never voted before.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, look, for instance, if you look at to where Obama did his speech, his acceptance speech, the audience just there was a million people. Mm. There were 1 million people at the rally watching him.
I know, it was stunning.
Including Oprah. Including
Oprah.
She took up four spots.
Yeah. And Jesse Jackson.
I'd like to know who actually all those people were that were hugging Oprah during the... They did about 8 cutbacks to
they
Oprah.
They just wanted another car, Pete.
And that's just all these people. Yes. You've got a car. You've got a car.
One of them was Oprah to get up on stage afterwards. Yeah. You've got a car. That's right.
I'm going to give you one,
bro. Yes. You've got the presidency.
If we, you could be Secretary of State. You are the Treasury Secretary.
Well, watch Colin Powell join that cabinet.
If we're talking about speeches, we can talk about speeches.
Yeah, we'll talk about the speeches now. Why not?
There's a bit of the McCain one, right?
Yep. You actually say, by the way, we are going to play both the full sets of speeches after this show. So if you still listen to the end of the show, we're going to play both speeches will be included.
Now, you could be fooled in listening to the McCain one.
Yep.
In thinking that perhaps, just perhaps, he had some left-wing leanings and was just lying partially throughout most of the campaign that he was partially right.
He would sell
in order
his
to
mother.
Get the base.
He would sell
now,
his mother.
Bobby, from us
it.
To have mentioned this on a previous show, Pete, or Abe.
Excuse me. We all actually mentioned it and
that's
talked
what I
about
mean.
Jerry Falwell.
That's what I mean.
And
yep.
talked about selling his soul
That's
to the devil.
I mean.
It's true.
I actually have a sneaking suspicion that McCain is not unhappy this evening. I think he's disappointed
in
the fact that he lost. He took 2 years. This is his last. It was going to be his only chance to be president. Mm. He was completely screwed over by a horrible swift voting campaign in 2000 by George W. Bush, which was the thing that he had allegedly fathered a black child out of wedlock, which was completely untrue, but that really hurt him in the South. And therefore lost a lot of primaries.
Yeah, the thing about McCain is, though, that, I mean, let's be honest, he might be a nice guy, all that kind of stuff like that, but really, do you want someone who's going to sell off
their
things they really believe in?
Yeah,
I mean, the guy used to be pro-choice.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden he's like, oh, no, pro-life. Yeah. And the thing of picking Sarah Palin seemed like a good idea and ended up being a massive mistake.
Yeah,
because one of the things that really was divisive about the two of them was the fact that Sarah Palin is a wacko nut job.
Yeah, she's old school Republican. Yeah.
She really is a wacko nut job.
And I think the potential for her to run in 2012 is awesome.
Yeah, I think so
that's
too.
That's a great idea.
I've got to say, if the RNC pick her, they're really stupid.
See, it was interesting. Sarah Palin was it was one of the pieces of film that came out of very early in the Alaskan voting, was Sarah Palin coming out voting with husband Todd, and she was asked by a journalist, so who did you vote for, Sarah? And she goes, well, you know, I'm going to keep that private, because that's my right as an American. I'm thinking, what, did you vote for Barack Obama? Like, as if you had the fucking choice.
She
so you either voted for John McCain, who is your running mate, or you maybe wrote in Ron Paul 08.
No, I think what happened, to be fair to Sarah, she probably didn't understand the ballot.
Or didn't understand the question.
And she's, I'd like to keep that secret.
Yes.
From myself, in fact. Yes.
But I did tell President Sarkozy when I spoke to him.
Exactly.
Yeah. He knew. Yeah. I told him.
They've got wily ways.
They do have wily ways.
We now return you to the Walking Black Forest U.S. election coverage. Double penetration.
Now we'll go back to our Fox News Update Center.
U.S. Election 2008 Update.
Currently, Fox News has John McCain on 168 Electoral College votes, Barack Obama on 9,472,653,
wow.
But it's too close to call.
Yeah, wow.
Because he could come back. There is a road that he can take.
It's a cliffhanger, Pete.
It's a cliffhanger. There is a road that he can take to get to the White House.
Yeah, it's a long road.
It's a long road.
But it is a road.
And it involves 2012.
Exactly.
But it's still too close to call.
And it involves some quite rocky dirt tracks.
Yes.
Up through the mountains and the hills.
Yep.
Past several farms.
Yep.
That are completely derelict.
Yep.
And then down the other side again.
Yep.
And there's a couple of cliffs.
Yep.
Dug into the thing with where the rain is washed out
all
the way.
Yep.
And all that sort of stuff.
Yep.
So it's a very, very long, tricky road.
Yep.
Very high risk.
Yes.
Risk road.
Yep.
But it is a road.
It's a road.
It's a road.
It's a road.
And Google Maps tells me it is a road.
It's there. And
is
Carl...
Is it called the Yellow Brick Road?
I believe so.
Yes.
And I believe Carl Rove has Karl Rove has talked to his insiders and on the ground, and he says he feels in the water that McCain can come back.
Nice. That's what I like.
And I like what Karl... I believe Karl Rove.
Yeah, yeah.
He is the architect.
I also believe... I hear he's actually put a down payment on a house on that road.
I've heard that.
Apparently real estate values will increase.
Can I briefly have a discussion about CNN? Just briefly.
Go on. Hit it with CNN.
Now, I was watching both CNN.com and the CNN feed, the ABC here in Sydney, although we, of course, are in the CNN grill in New York City. Hey, AC, what's going down?
We took a feed from
Sydney. The hair. It was nice tonight.
From Sydney.
Good. You know, I've got... looking at AC's...
Oh, you like my hair too. Thanks, man. Appreciate
looking
it.
At AC's hair.
Can we're trying to do a show. Can you just leave Pete alone?
Piss off, AC.
I'm not entirely sure.
I'll send you my number via Bluetooth. Thanks, man.
That hair's real.
Mm. It may well be.
I'm not too sure.
I'm just going to take a jump to the left.
Another step to the right. Aye. Now, I want to talk about CNN. So CNN's coverage was anchored by the aforementioned AC360 and by Wolf Blitzer.
And a lot of graphics on the screen.
Lots of graphics.
A lot of graphics.
But I don't want to talk about the graphics.
Right.
I want to actually talk about the debut of the technology known as the hologram. Yes.
Oh, good Lord.
Did you see the hologram?
Very briefly.
Exactly right. Now, I actually did take a screen grab of it. And if you want to see a screen grab, it's on... this screen grab's all over. The Huffington Post has got a screen grab. It was CNN's Jessica Yellen, who was in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Talking to Wolf Blitzer. Now, there's the screen grab. Mm-hmm. It is the exact spitting image of Princess Leia from 1977's original, not special edition, original Star Wars.
Yeah, I'm having a Palpatine moment.
Now, the way this was done, allegedly, was that she was standing in a room with 35 cameras around her.
Yep.
Filming her from all angles, and then that created the 3D shot. The idea was that Wolf was effectively talking to her as if she was in the studio. That was great. Wolf was looking at her, because Wolf could actually not see her, but he was looking as if he could see her. She couldn't see Wolf, and was looking about 4 inches past his left shoulder.
Right.
Now, maybe she was looking at AC360 behind him.
Could have been.
The technology just was a little bit off. Now, it worked really, really well when AC360 was talking to Will.i.am from the Black Eyed Peas.
Right.
A hardcore activist, of course, has been out there, part of Rock the Vote, which is an MTV thing, which actually worked really well this year, according to MTV. They had to cut to McCain's concession speech. What the hologram then spotted was Will.i.am walking off and then just vanishing. So they showed Will.i.am's ass as he walked off.
It's brilliant.
So the technology still has a little bit to work with. Yeah. The other thing they actually showed was the 3D house.
Oh.
Did you see the 3D house?
I saw the 3D house.
So on the table...
So on the hologram thing, what is the point? Because...
That is very true.
Well, apart from the technical problems...
Yep.
If they eventually did get it working, ironed out all the glitches, what is the point? Because she's too small to actually see,
yep.
And you would think that a close-up split screen or something like that would be a lot more useful, I would have thought, than, you know, help me, Obi-Wan.
I would assume that it's that whole thing about, well, because we have the hologram, you should be watching our coverage.
Yes, that's right.
Rather than watching MSNBC, which just had the 3D computer screen. Exactly, because you would have been watching CNN. Also had the touchscreen technology. Each of the screens was its own touchscreen, activating into various gimmicks through across all the other big screens.
I think I missed out on a lot. I didn't see any of this good
CNN,
stuff.
CNN, of course, had the.
I don't know why I didn't.
CNN has the largest.
I mean, I didn't watch the TV. Was that a critical?
That could have been a critical thing. CNN actually
has your iPhone. Didn't get it.
CNN actually has the largest television screen in the world, which is the one that is behind their election screen. It is the officially it's world record television screen in the world.
But the crew were playing Xbox 360.
They were playing Xbox 360.
They didn't use it for the actual broadcast. No.
I was just wondering.
They're playing Far Cry 2 on it at the time.
Spoiler!
Get in his flank!
Now, the other interesting thing, of course, with the 3D house
12-year-old.
Was that when you touchscreened and touched the battle for the center of the House of Reps, out of a table, sort of erected, so to speak, erected the American Congressional House. Just came out, you can see the thing go... and then they were able to like do the this 3D house. Picture. Now, what's really funny about
almost like the chess game on the Millennium Falcon.
Almost like the exactly right.
I think you better let him win.
So are you telling me here, and Richard, do you have any inside gossip about this, that in fact all these graphics were in fact provided by Lucasfilm?
Well, I've probably already given it away, but yeah, that's what I'm suggesting.
Right.
From some inside gossip. Well,
Wolf Blitzer does look a little like George Lucas.
I think he looks a little bit like Obi-Wan Kenobi.
He does look a bit like Obi-Wan Kenobi. Well,
the good thing is, since
but Jessica Yellen doesn't look anything like but Soledad O'Brien does.
Oh, I like Soledad O'Brien.
I know you do. Mm. I know you do.
Now, of course, the good thing about Lucasfilm doing the graphics for this is, in about 20 years, they're going to go back and redo the election.
Yes,
this time, McCain will win.
Nice. No, they'll replace McCain.
Oh, right.
They'll just take him out.
Arnie.
It'll be seamless.
Exactly right. Yeah.
Now,
no, ma'am, he's not an Arab. I like him. He's a good family man. I would not. I just happen to have fundamental differences with him on policy.
See?
Sounds like Idi Amin.
Oh, good come Lord. On! That was as good as my Tony Blair. It was as good as my Tony
Sorry,
Blair.
Sorry, Spotify, that is not Austrian.
See, if I just did
Ivan Reitman, he's a comedy genius.
It wouldn't have been a problem.
No, that's all.
No, it wouldn't, because the line covers it up.
The line totally covers it up. Exactly right.
But then we think you were Tony Martin.
That's a really scary thought for anybody.
Yeah.
Now, taking Sonny Howard's a little bit more serious, if I may be so bold. Many of the ballots across the United States had various measures put on them that were, some were
propositions. And they were useful, like if you're doing sewing, or if you're doing your paving, then
that's
you can use
useful.
The measure on the side there
yes.
to measure how much you wanted to go.
That's very true. The three big ones, though, we need to talk about, and so these are reasonably serious ones, were ones against the use of medicinal marijuana, ones against abortion, and ones against gay marriage. Mm. Now, there are 153...
There are some for those things, Pete.
Oh, well, okay, some for some, yeah, that's
what
very
if you wanted? What if you were gay... Mm-hmm. and wanted to get married while smoking pot and have an abortion?
You might have a problem.
You're stuffed!
Now, you'd have to, but you'd have to be a fetus.
And don't forget, life starts at that point in time.
It does.
Now,
life starts with a glint in the eye, Pete.
Life starts
a
when
glint
just
in
a,
the eye.
Just when
says,
that, when that little,
I like to root you.
Just when that little spermie with Jesus' face on it connects with that little egg with Jesus' face on us, and then...
Yeah.
Are you telling me that Jesus...
Jesus mates with Jesus?
He does.
Wow.
Yeah.
Jesus was
good. Come on! Jesus, God, and this Holy Spirity thing that's meant to look like a dove, they're all the same thing.
And
how does that work?
We've just now lost a third of our list.
We have.
I'm confused.
I know, so am I.
I just thought Jesus was a Republican.
He votes Republican.
He was.
What is unfortunate, which is interesting, that while the Obama win was a swing to the left, or as the media reports, the center-left.
Mm.
No, they report it as the center-left.
No, Time Warp.
No, it's not. And all the Senate and House races were also jumps to the left. Many of these propositions that would have allowed, for example, same-sex marriage in California were defeated. Many of these propositions that would have allowed abortion for circumstances not covered by Roe v. Wade were also defeated. Many of these, and that included in states such as Colorado, although South Dakota did defeat an initiative to ban abortion except in cases of rape, incest, or serious health, which is good. Now, South Dakota being a fairly Republican state, that's a surprising win in that area. There was a whole lot of ballots in San Francisco about decriminalizing prostitution, which lost.
And that's
with
Bill
lost.
Clinton visiting next week.
Exactly right. That lost. The probably the biggest one to watch was the one about same-sex marriage in California, which was allowed by the California Supreme Court, and over 18,000 gay and lesbian couples have been married since that. And unfortunately, the measure known as Proposition 8 was defeated on the California ballot, which will now limit marriage to only heterosexual couples.
Interesting.
That one has pretty much won across America. It's one of that. I guess it's an indicative one of the continued conservative nature of the American population generally outside of places like New York and California. But even so, with California...
Does that mean that the previous ones are nullified, or they just continue on?
They will continue on.
Wow.
They will be allowed, but they may be the last, unfortunately. There's a bunch of others floating around. If you go to MSNBC and just type in... Proposition 8, you'll get, there's a whole heap of them. Not most of them aren't very interesting, but the ones I think which were quite indicative of the of a strange polarisation of the American electorate were the ones on same-sex marriage and abortion, both of which, well, I guess one of which was a platform of Obama, who in fact is pro-choice, whereas he has clearly stated that same-sex marriage will not happen under his presidency, which is an interesting...
So well, it's interesting how Americans can kind of, you know, when we talk kind of left-wing politics or certainly centre-left politics, they can divide things like that.
They can.
You know, they don't, it's not a package deal.
Yeah, no, I found that really interesting because certainly in 2006 there was another batch of them as well. There's another 150-odd propositions to, for example, ban medicinal marijuana.
Particularly in case of gay marriage.
Yep. You know, one of the big things that Sarah Palin stood up and said very early in her speeches as vice presidential candidate was that she wanted to overturn Roe v. Wade, which, of course, is the landmark case in the Supreme Court that decriminalised and made legal abortion in the United States.
And, of course, her famous line, one caribou, one bullet.
Yep, that's the one, yep.
But isn't it all stemming from 9/11? Because, you know, from 9/11...
Who are you, Rudy Giuliani?
Well, I just want to talk about 9/11.
Because
on 9/11, that was 9/11.
Yes, I
heard. And
so,
when 9/11 happened on 9/11, it increased the Christianification of the United States.
Totally.
Because there was, you know, it's the whole, you know, when I'm threatened, I'm going to be more conservative or I'm going to be more religious.
Us versus them.
Exactly. So this is just a continuation of that.
But here's the interesting thing. And once again, watching the coverage, I think on MSNBC, they were talking about how the real tectonic shift occurred in 1960, in the early 1960s. The South used to be Democrat.
Yes, that's right.
They used to be hardcore Democrats. Yeah,
Southern Democrats, absolutely.
And then all the way up to around about 1960.
Yeah.
The election of JFK. And then when the civil rights movement started occurring, it agitated the Southern white population, who then effectively moved towards evangelical churches, joined the strong Christian conservative movement. There was a caller I was listening to on the Alan Combs show on Fox Radio
yesterday. Sick man.
But he was basically... So Alan Combs, of course, is the one pretend liberal amongst the right-wing hordes of Fox Radio, and of course he does the show Hannity and Combs, and is meant to be a sort of right-wing, left-wing battle, but he's not particularly left-wing. Mm. But he asked this southern guy from, I think, Oklahoma, said...
you know, it's the place for me.
I've heard that. Said, look, you know, I'm going to vote McCain because he doesn't believe in gays, doesn't believe in, you know...
What's he going to do, shut his eyes and turn around?
Well, and so Combs said to him, look, he said, do you have any children? He goes, yeah, I've got a son and a daughter. And he said, so what happens if your son came up to you and said, Dad, I'm gay? And the guy said, I wouldn't allow him in my house again. So Combs said to him, but you'd love him, wouldn't you? You'd still love him. He's your son. He goes, yeah, I'd love him, but I'd tell him that I'd never want to see him again. He's not allowed in my house. And if I saw him, I would shoot him. A bit like that, really. And that was the general line. He said, don't come near my house. And that's the lack of understanding that why, I guess, ultimately why states like Oklahoma and Kentucky and Mississippi and the like all go Republican. But it's fascinating that a state like South Dakota, you know, defeats a bill on banning abortion.
Mm.
I mean, that's that stunningly complex American political landscape.
Yeah, but remember who voted in this election.
Yeah, it's true. It's all the
socialists.
It's true too.
So in a way, it's sort of, you know, because the Republicans would have thought, well, maybe they would have thought, you know, well, it's not going to change.
Can we now officially declare America socialist?
In no way, shape, or form.
Well, don't forget. I mean, as
potentially
McCain,
socialist.
Yes. As McCain said, he's a socialist.
Well, he's got a social. That's true. I didn't think of it.
Yeah,
that
so
way.
It's officially socialist.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh.
Exactly.
So this will be the line that will be used by Fox News, of course. Now we're in danger of socialist rule.
Exactly right. Now, we should actually talk about the other thing that I think is really important is to sort of give a... we've been talking about this campaign now for 2 years.
Oh, yeah, about that.
We've been following the campaign for about 2 years, and certainly very strongly since the defeat of the some junta by some guy with glasses. I can't remember what his name was. What was his name? Do you remember?
No.
No, I have no memory.
Certainly since Abe got on board the
Obama bandwagon.
It took
me
a while.
It did take a while. I believe 2002?
later than that.
2004. You're right. You were there. You actually rang him up and said you should run.
I did.
You have a close personal relationship.
You know, the difficulty...
But he didn't. He stood his ground.
That's right.
And he decided to go for president.
The difficulty, of course, is that he had to pick Biden because Biden's American.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I think that this could have been a very different race.
And Obama ABE 360.
That's right.
Nice.
What it would have been.
I mean, with Clinton, there's no way they would have gone for that.
No. I could see a Clinton team campaign.
Yeah, no, I'm serious because, you know, it would have been too much change.
Yeah.
Too much change in one go.
You reckon?
Yeah. A black man and a woman.
Yeah.
All on the same ticket?
Yeah, it would have been an interesting ticket. You're right. No, you're right there.
You're right.
All right. So I'm going to pick some of the stuff that came out of it. A number of the pollsters have been talking about the campaign because now we're into the three R's of the campaign. Retribution, and I can't think of two others.
Retribution.
Rooting,
yep.
And rejoicing.
Yes, there we go, thank you. But the retribution, of course, is really important because now the guests are going to say that we should never have had McCain. That Romney might have won. That Giuliani might have won.
Well, Romney would have won.
You reckon Romney would have won?
No, I don't know. I think more than McCain would have.
I don't know. Huckabee, maybe.
Oh, no, Huckabee's too much of a little weird guy.
Yeah,
I don't think anybody would have won.
As much as his politics aren't as bad as the other, I think Mitt Romney could probably have gone the distance, but Sarah Palin, I think, still would have been the problem.
Well, I don't know if he would have picked Sarah Palin then.
Yeah, I don't know. He's a very conservative guy, so I don't know.
Why am I hearing cowbells? Now, some of the really important stuff that's come out. Is he telling us to get nicked? I think he is. So some of the really...
He probably voted Republican.
Reckon he voted Republican. Why are you holding up a pig mask?
That's not a pig mask.
No, check for the lipstick.
Check for the lipstick. Is that a pig with lipstick?
Yes, it is.
Excellent. That's a Sarah.
Yeah.
Palin. Have you had your head in this?
Ooh.
Anyway, we've got a pig mask in here now.
My tongue inside.
Oh, very nice. Oh. Anyway, let's talk about some of the really important moments in the campaign that had some fundamental effect on this. I think the one that's really interesting is the one they picked, the one where McCain in April 2007
did it again
decided to change the words to the classic Beach Boys song Barbara Ann.
Yeah,
you know the one.
Yeah,
Barbara Ann. To the words bomb Iran.
That's kind of a problem.
That was well done, because if you want to find that, there's actually at least 70 different versions on YouTube at the moment.
It was even on the CNN site tonight.
Was it on the CNN site tonight as well? That was a big one. That didn't help him very well.
No, while we're back in 2007,
yes,
I probably should step back a little bit in time and kick off what exactly happened in the campaign.
Yep.
The first person to step forward was former First Lady Hillary Clinton.
Yes.
And in a video announcement, she said that her bid for the White House was started with the words, "I'm in, and I'm in to win."
Yes.
Well, she didn't, but nonetheless, she was in to win.
That's very true. And, of course, the first person who stepped up for the Republicans was Rudy. And it wasn't actually Rudy. It was, I thought it was actually Mitt Romney, actually, was the first person to step up.
I wouldn't be surprised. McCain actually waited until February the 28th, he announced that on the David Letterman show, and Obama said that he launched his, what he quoted as his improbable quest in the hometown of Abraham Lincoln on February the 10th.
Now, what I found also...
2008?
2007.
All right.
Yeah. What I found really interesting is there's been some discussions, by the way, about who may actually run for 2012, and some of these were actually serious names. Obviously, Sarah Palin has got her name up for 2012. The one that actually was covered by MSNBC, now they could have been taking the piss because they tend to do this.
They do.
Is that there's a serious thought about running at least for some office, whether it be Senate or House, Joe the Plumber.
Oh, for God's sake.
Now, Joe the Plumber, is someone who only rose to prominence because he stood there and, you know, gotcha question to Barack Obama, mm-hmm. sorry, President Obama, mm-hmm. President-elect Obama, said to him, when Obama answered his question, we need to spread the wealth. And from that, he's become the poster boy for the Barack Obama is a socialist campaign.
Right.
I also heard George Bush might be coming back in 2012 because that way they'll win back Florida.
See, this
now,
is...
It's interesting because Jeb Bush is actually apparently a contender for the next election. They do want another Bush.
Do they?
Which is really weird, because I thought Bush went out of fashion in the 80s. But anyway, that's just me.
That's another thing as well.
They'd have to be idiots to want another Bush, wouldn't they?
I have no idea.
Yeah, every second president's a Bush. What? They're going to put that in the Constitution, are they?
The Republicans have a serious problem at the moment. And let's just, for a brief moment, talk about
this. That's a
little
bit understated, isn't it, Pete?
They are at their lowest ebb since 1992.
They're broke.
They are broke.
They're actually broke.
They have lost fundamental aspects
of
their
really
base.
A long time, is it, Pete? I mean,
no, but in American politics,
lowest since the last Democrat got in, is what you.
Well, yes, but don't forget
but
that
they shouldn't be.
That's the thing. They've had 8 years of fairly unfettered power, and there was a very interesting comment made by who was it? Might have been Katie Couric, where she said that one of the opportunities that the Republicans had that they never took is the fact that the Latino vote is in many ways their perfect, absolutely perfect demographic. They are strong on the family unit. They are very religious. Mm-hmm. They are very, actually quite conservative.
And particularly with the links with the whole Cuba thing.
Yep.
It's not unlikely. There's some very strong Latino politicians who come from, you know, ex-Cuban communities, but speak to all Latinos.
The Latino population.
And Latinas.
Generally, and granted this is probably a generalization, but they're hardworking. They believe in the American dream. They believe if you work hard, you will succeed. That is Republican bread and butter.
Yes, but you know why?
Yes, and this is the problem where they fucked it up.
Because you know why the Republicans didn't? Because they all just think they're a bunch of fucking wetbacks.
Yes, exactly right.
And honestly, that's it.
I agree.
Because every Republican goes on and on about Mexicans, goes on and on about...
Send them home, get rid of them, build a giant fucking wall to stop them climbing over it.
Goes on about illegal, you know, workers and this, that and the other, and really they're too bloody racist to actually notice that this is a base that they can build.
60% of the population of Texas are Latino.
You know who was a Republican?
Who?
Abraham Lincoln was a Republican.
I heard that.
Hello!
I know. And this is the thing, this is what I don't get. The Republicans have been pandering to their ever-decreasing base.
Yeah.
Going, you know, there's that stupid, racist element of the Republican Party that says these Mexicans are taking our jobs.
Mm-hmm.
They're taking the jobs of our kids. No, they're the only ones who will go in and do the jobs that you won't fucking do.
I think they should be referred to now, you know, in the old sense of, you know, the moral minority who then became the moral majority. I think they should be the conservative minority.
That's what they are becoming,
now. They're the conservative minority. They've got outdated values that nobody really cares about anymore, and they can't even get a guy up to be president.
No, they can't. And this is and the reality was they actually had probably one of the most conservative figures running as vice president that's ever run on a ticket. I mean, she is hardcore right-wing religious loony.
She's a whack job.
And she couldn't even energise the base.
No, she couldn't.
And because the base isn't big enough.
And that's the problem. I don't think the Republicans actually know who they're catering to. They cater to the religious right, which, as Richard said, really is a very small part of their base.
Yep.
It's a very small part. But really, the core of the Republican base, quite often, and if you look at the South, are racists.
Yeah.
They just are.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they'd be frickin' Democrats.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that, and that's why in the South, when you look at Clinton had to be a conservative Democrat.
Yeah.
Because if he wasn't a conservative Democrat, he would lose that vote, and that's what Clinton got. Clinton got the South.
He did. He won
because he was a conservative Democrat. Exactly what they wanted.
And he was someone they trusted because he was from the South.
That's right.
He was from Kansas.
He was from Kansas.
He was. So they can't... Their core base are either conservatives or racists from the South. Yep. Now, where else do you go?
Yeah, that's the thing. You got nowhere else to go. And ultimately, they had their opportunity to tie down the Latino vote, because, as
I
said,
that's a fascinating point. It's a very good point.
It's a really interesting point, because in reality they missed it, and they will never get it again.
They just can't fundamentally, though. That's the problem.
And at some point, a state like Texas, which is Democratic, Republican heartland, will fall. Whether it be a governor, a state senator, a house, it will fall.
We've talked about this many times before, but to put a slightly different angle on it, the Conservatives depend on making everybody else into a Conservative.
Yes.
And the Democrats just assume that everybody can be different.
Yes, exactly
They're not going to turn everybody into Conservatives. When are they going to realise that that's not going to happen?
Because, part of the reason the left-wing or the progressive sides of politics have a problem is because they do let people be who they are. So you end up with huge rifts inside the left-wing of politics. Arguably why someone like Nader comes along and pulled 5% of the vote in 2000 and 2004, because he wasn't... Kerry and Gore weren't left-wing enough for certain parts of the left-wing movement.
That's right.
You would never have that happen in the right, although you did have Ross Perot, who did pull 20-odd percent of the vote at one point.
Ross Perot was interesting, because Ross Perot actually wasn't a racist.
No.
And he also didn't cater to the religious right at all. And that was part of the reason why he fell over, because he didn't have either.
Yeah, and so he just
he had everyone else.
Yeah.
Well, the Republicans had the racist and the religious right. Perot had not all of the rest, but he was going for that middle ground, right?
Yep.
You know, the almost the people are Howard's battlers.
Yep.
He almost had that.
Yeah,
and, of course, the fucking rich.
Yep.
But the others he missed out on.
Now, the other really interesting debate that I'd like to bring this back to Australia, even though we are currently in the CNN grill in New York.
Which is interesting. I just called home before, and apparently Australia's still there.
I believe so.
Yeah. Now, K-Rod's in the hissy.
One of the things that Barack Obama said is this is history in the making. This is this is history 221 years in the making. McCain said it as well. America now has an African-American president. Now,
scary, isn't it? Say it again, Pete.
America has an African-American president. Now, I'd like to...
The West Wing was sort of half right.
It was. Now, I'd like to ask you guys a question.
Sure.
How many Indigenous politicians are there currently in federal parliament?
None.
Ours. Absolute ours.
Isn't there one?
Nope.
No, there's none.
Aidan Ridgway was defeated at the last election.
Right. And the guy, and the one before, there was a woman, a Democrat. Before that, I've forgotten her name.
How many Indigenous, outside of the Northern Territory, how many Indigenous politicians are there currently in state parliaments? The figure, I'll tell you, is three. It's three. Linda Burney in here in New South Wales. One in Western Australia, one in South Australia.
Right.
Now, what chance in the next 50 years is there that Australia will elect an Indigenous Prime Minister?
None.
And let's let's talk
unless
more.
Unless it's Ray Martin.
Now, let's talk more here in Australia about...
No. I don't think so. I mean, if somebody came up... I mean, look at Obama.
Yeah.
How quickly he came up and bam, there he is, top job. I think if someone came along in Australia, we would embrace them.
Okay. I don't know. I don't know.
I think it's a little different, though, and I'm running along probably Richard's line here. I think it's a little bit different in that in America, for instance, because America had a civil rights movement which said that we deserve to be as good as you deserve to be. Now, the civil
rights... There was more at stake.
Yeah. Mm. Now, the civil rights movement in Australia did and didn't work, and unfortunately, really it hasn't advanced at all.
Yeah.
Like, it's gone nowhere.
But we don't have all of the... I mean, I know, you know, there were atrocities and stuff like that, but we don't have the same opinion of our Aboriginals.
That's right.
That the Americans did of blacks. I mean, they enslaved them for hundreds of years. Mm. And we didn't really do it on the same level.
But let's act, and of course, granted, the African-American population is a significant greater proportion of the American population than that is. But let's bring that back to Australia being much more of a multicultural country than any of the others in the world. America is effectively a three-part nation.
Yeah.
But Australia's massively multicultural. The Asian population...
Democrats... Non-whites and Nazis.
That's
the
one.
I think is the three.
So you've got a strong Asian population here in Australia. You've obviously got a very strong Middle Eastern population in the capital cities.
Well, particularly not that they're allowed to have any schools.
No, they're not allowed to have schools.
They're allowed to have any schools. That would give them an education.
That's un-Australian.
Un-Australian.
Particularly not allowed to do that. But once again, you talk about Australia being a progressive country. I don't think there... I actually think there's very strong... I mean, obviously, America has very strong inherent racism. Australia has very strong inherent racism buried in its population. And not even buried. If you go out to Camden, what happened at Camden with the Islamic school was a classic example of not buried inherent racism. It was overt racism. They can have a school, just not in my street.
Yeah, was the line. But
it'd
be worse if the same situation was in the US.
Yeah,
it would be worse.
You reckon?
Yeah, they'd be burning crosses on the lawn and killing people.
Well, we didn't have a 9/11, you know, and we don't have a God that 90% people believe in.
Well, that's true, and we don't have
On the other hand, though, it's probably a lot simpler than that, because really, the vast majority of the Aboriginal population in Australia are disparate.
Yeah.
They're a disparate population.
Well, they're tribal.
Well, yes and no. You've got
and
to also
been
remember.
Intervened.
Yeah, but well, see, you've also got to remember that this tribal thing that we talk about, Aboriginal tribal communities, most of which is crap, because they were kicked out of their land and thrown into the freaking desert.
Yeah.
Right? They don't actually belong there, right? Mm. Most Aboriginal communities don't belong in the desert. Yeah. They exist on the coast, or that's where they're from. Yeah. We kicked them into the middle of the country. So. I think part of that problem is that the good thing for the African American population is they have a strong urban base, right? Yeah. Good people who work industrial jobs or lawyers or whatever they are, they work similar jobs to the rest of the population.
And there are some strong cities with strong African American population.
Look, Chicago,
Philadelphia, Miami.
And a long history of heavy involvement in government, whether it's state government, local government, whatever government it's going to be, right? We just don't have that.
What has brought that up? Now, obviously, there are problems in literacy in America, particularly amongst African-American populations. That has existed, but it is nowhere near as bad as the literacy problem that exists in Indigenous populations here in Australia.
God, no.
At least
they have access to schools.
Yeah, there is still a life expectancy problem amongst African-Americans. They do live shorter lives in America than the general average, but once again, it is nowhere near as bad as the Indigenous population here in Australia.
The average Aboriginal man lives to the age of 42.
Yes. I know, exactly
that's
right.
Pathetic.
And considering the average male Australian male lives to 74?
Yep, something like that, I believe.
That's a huge gap.
Yep.
Now, granted, while the scale isn't as bad, and you're right, there hasn't been there was the systemic violence and genocide that occurred in Australia.
Yeah.
The quantum is different. I mean, and that doesn't in no way minimises the horrendous nature of it. But the quantum is different. There's less, the Indigenous population is less of a proportion of the Australian population than the African American is in America. But there is a fundamental basis point that we are so far behind, yet we stand on the world stage and say we're progressive. When was the last time there have been three, or maybe four women that have led major political parties in this country?
Mm-hmm.
Julia Gillard was the Prime Minister earlier this year.
She was, but she would never be elected Prime Minister because of the political ramifications of electing someone from the left rather than being a woman.
And most of them have been leaders of the Democrats.
They've been leaders of the Democrats.
As such, left-wing liberals.
That's true. Mm. But there's also been the situation where you had Joan Kerner in Victoria, who was given effectively a poison chalice.
Mm.
Carmen Lawrence, who was given a poison chalice in WA after Brian Burke. Mm. I think they've been the only two...
What's her face in Brisbane?
Now you've got Anna Bly in Brisbane.
Mm.
In some senses, people believe she's also been given a poison chalice.
Mm. Look, I think...
And the Northern Territory before...
Well, the Northern Territory...
Yeah, she did well.
She did well, but at federal level, which was, I guess, my point, there's been some at state level... The first two were given effectively no chance of being elected and were handed, you know, after Kane and after Burke. That's two pretty bad governments to follow. At federal level, the closest has been Julia Gillard, who, because she's from the left, will have no chance of ever being Prime Minister. It worries me that, yes, we have had some progress, I do agree, and I'm not putting America up on a pedestal. It just worries me that we are not discussing in this country those issues.
I suppose we're also probably being overly simplistic, just in one sense here. The African-American population are immigrants to the country, right? As the white guys and everyone else, they're immigrants to the country, right? They're brought there forcibly, but they're nonetheless immigrants. Aboriginals are Indigenous people, like the American Indians are Indigenous people.
Americans,
when was the last time an Indigenous American was in a parliament? or we ever saw in the limelight.
Oh, that's a good point.
Pretty
rarely.
And really, it's just, it's the pattern of indigenous people around the world that they are dispossessed. I mean, the actual pattern of abuse between American Indians and Australian Aborigines is exactly the same. Apart from the buffalo, it's exactly the same.
And John Wayne.
Who was scared of horses. It's exactly the same.
Yeah, no, I agree. And certainly we are never going to get to the... I mean, this is serious, both sort of almost anthropological discussions as well as obviously strong political discussions. We're never going to get to the core of it.
Who would have thought we'd talk about anthropology tonight?
I know. But I...
I was just going to say... keep in mind, we have had 12 years of complete conservative rule.
True.
We had a republic referendum, which was killed by that same conservative government, and countless other programs that have been rolled back as well. So, I mean, if the republic had gone through, if we'd had someone like Rudd or whatever instead of Howard, who knows where we would have been now, you know?
Yep.
The whole sorry thing would have happened much, much earlier because it would have been on the back of all Keating
stuff. Yeah, Keating stuff, exactly.
Yep. Exactly, the Republic, all that sort of stuff. So the issues might have been at the forefront, whereas when Howard got in, it was sort of like, okay, well, we're going to have to wait another lifetime.
And he established, I mean, he actually in some ways quite endorsed the sort of undermining racist...
It's called...
So I think there's an element of what you're saying that is correct. Yeah. You know, we missed an opportunity... And you know, we aren't as progressive as we seem to think we are. But in the same sense, I don't think the issues are really the same.
But also, it's a good point, because also remember that Howard used racism to win three elections.
Yes.
And really, he has distanced the white population in Australia from any other part of the population, whether it's Asian or Middle Eastern or Aboriginal or whatever. He divided the population. Now, it's not a dissimilar thing that happened in America, but remember, America has a history of a fairly strong Middle Eastern urban culture, where Australia, it's not as, you wouldn't say it's as strong probably, and certainly not as prominent. That's probably the difference there as well.
Do they have a history of strong Middle Eastern culture?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, a place like Dearborn in Michigan?
They do, but also the thing is that basically, similar to Australia, I suppose, a lot of these new immigrants and stuff like that open shops. Basically, that's what they... And then it gets built up from there. I mean, you look at people like Casey Kasem, for instance, and Casey Kasem's a Lebanese guy.
Yeah.
You know, his parents came from Lebanon or...
Is he really?
Like. Yeah.
I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a strong kind of undertone in America, probably more so than he... Remember, that for, you know, 10 years or 8 years, whatever it was, Howard progressively made these people the bad guys.
Totally, totally. And it created that environment. We were talking about earlier about the whole Camden thing.
Yeah.
It made that acceptable.
Yeah.
That you can on the front page talk about, you know, we're tolerant, we just don't like Muslims.
Yeah.
You know, that was the line. We're very tolerant. Yeah. If they want to set up a Christian school here, no problems, go for it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But no, we're not having an Islamic school here. I guess ultimately is that we need to start having this dialogue in Australia. I think that's what I'm trying to, I guess, get across.
Yeah.
We're not having the dialogue because I think sometimes we fool ourselves that we are a little bit progressive. And I think we actually need to have the dialogue about why the Indigenous population has life expectancy problems, why the Indigenous population has huge literacy issues. We need to start talking about how we can improve, make Parliament more representative of the multicultural mix that we actually have.
Before we have that talk,
yeah,
we should cross to the tally room.
Okay.
US election 2008 update.
Fox News has once again now got Brit Hume up there on the stage. He's telling, and I'm just getting the live feed from Brit Hume now, he's now saying that he's going to bed tonight with the results still in the balance. At 5 a.m. Eastern time in America, he's finally decided to go to bed.
What's the count at this point that they're reporting over at Fox?
The Fox count has actually run out of zeros on the
really?
Obama side. They've actually
had to borrow the one from the stock exchange.
The world debt clock. They've actually had to borrow that
and
write in and rub the dollar sign out and put another one at the top there. And McCain is on three. But it is still
blind ball.
It still officially has the words too close to call.
Yeah, too close to call.
And good on Fox.
And now, what a walk in the Black Forest. U.S. election coverage 2008. Double penetration.
So, on this double penetration 08 special, we're just going to play you about a 6 minute piece of Obama's acceptance
You'd
speech.
You'd need a bucket of lube for that, wouldn't you? The whole double penetration thing?
You may.
I don't know. It depends on where it is.
Is that true? Maybe. Maybe.
You need KY.
You need Kentucky?
You need Kentucky.
So that's where they need Kentucky.
Who won Kentucky?
All right. I believe it was McCain. So this is of the broader 16-minute speech. This was from Grant Park in Chicago, where an estimated 1 million people were around in the general vicinity watching. They were joined, of course, by, as we mentioned before, Reverend Jesse Jackson. Oprah was there. This was probably the speech that most of America had been waiting for. So we're going to play you about a 6.5 minute bit from the middle, and some of this is actually
going to... We'll play the full thing after the show.
But I actually have to say, and I'll hold this off after the show. Have a listen to this 6.5 minute. We'll have a chat after this little bit.
But above all, I will never forget who this victory truly belongs to. It belongs to you. It belongs to you. I was never the likeliest candidate for this office. We didn't start with much money or many endorsements. Our campaign was not hatched in the halls of Washington. It began in the backyards of Des Moines, in the living rooms of Concord, and the front porches of Charleston. It was built by working men and women who dug into what little savings they had to give $5 a $10 and $20 to the cause. It grew strength from the young people who rejected the myth of their generation's apathy, who left their homes and their families for jobs that offered little pay and less sleep. It drew strength from the not so young people who braved the bitter cold and scorching heat to knock on doors of perfect strangers, and from the millions of Americans who volunteered and organized and proved that more than two centuries later, a government of the people, by the people, and for the people has not perished from the earth. This is your victory. Now, I know you didn't do this just to win an election. I know you didn't do it for me. You did it because you understand the enormity of the task that lies ahead. For even as we celebrate tonight, we know the challenges that tomorrow will bring are the greatest of our lifetime. Two wars, a planet in peril, the worst financial crisis in a century. Even as we stand here tonight, we know there are brave Americans waking up in the deserts of Iraq and the mountains of Afghanistan to risk their lives for us. There are mothers and fathers who will lie awake after their children fall asleep and wonder how they'll make the mortgage, or pay their doctor's bills, or save enough for their child's college education. There's new energy to harness, new jobs to be created, new schools to build, and threats to meet, alliances to repair. The road ahead will be long. Our climb will be steep. We may not get there in 1 year or even in one term, but America, I have never been more hopeful than I am tonight that we will get there. I promise you, we as a people will get there. There will be setbacks and false starts. There are many who won't agree with every decision or policy I make as president. And we know the government can't solve every problem. But I will always be honest with you about the challenges we face. I will listen to you, especially when we disagree. And above all, I will ask you to join in the work of remaking this nation the only way it's been done in America for 221 years, block by block, brick by brick, calloused hand by calloused hand. What began 21 months ago in the depths of winter cannot end on this autumn night. This victory alone is not the change we seek. It is only the chance for us to make that change. And that cannot happen if we go back to the way things were. It can't happen without you, without a new spirit of service, a new spirit of sacrifice. So let us summon a new spirit of patriotism, of responsibility, where each of us resolves to pitch in and work harder and look after not only ourselves but each other. Let us remember that if this financial crisis taught us anything, it's that we cannot have a thriving Wall Street while Main Street suffers. In this country, we rise or fall as one nation, as one people. Let's resist the temptation to fall back on the same partisanship and pettiness and immaturity that has poisoned our politics for so long. Let's remember that it was a man from this state who first carried the banner of the Republican Party to the White House, a party founded on the values of self-reliance and individual liberty and national unity. Those are values that we all share. And while the Democratic Party has won a great victory tonight, we do so with a measure of humility and determination to heal the divides that have held back our progress. As Lincoln said to a nation far more divided than ours, we are not enemies, but friends. Though passion may have strained, it must not break our bonds of affection. And to those Americans whose support I have yet to earn, I may not have won your vote tonight, but I hear your voices. I need your help, and I will be your president too. And all those watching tonight from beyond our shores, from parliaments and palaces, to those who are huddled around radios in the forgotten corners of the world, our stories are singular, but our destiny is shared. And a new dawn of American leadership is at hand. To those who would tear the world down, we will defeat you. To those who seek peace and security, we support you. And to all those who have wondered if America's beacon still burns as bright, tonight we proved once more that the true strength of our nation comes not from the might of our arms or the scale of our wealth, but from the enduring power of our ideals, democracy, liberty, opportunity, and unyielding hope.
Triple R presents A Walk to the Black Forest U.S. election coverage 2008. Double penetration.
Now that, ladies and gentlemen, will be a speech you will hear many, many a time, particularly over the next, obviously, 3 or 4 months, but I think for history.
And it's rare, yeah, probably, that you will hear it in its entirety, so we are going to play it in its entirety.
Yeah,
and I must admit, after the show, we're going to play it in its entirety, and I do love the way he started off the speech. Yeah, so listen to how this guy is kind of very different. Listen to how he starts off his speech.
But I don't... As a moment in time, it is up there.
Yeah.
But as far as the language is concerned, it's not really, I have a dream.
No, it's not.
No, it's more, it's time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's more time, yeah.
It's really, it's like that. It's almost Goffian style.
Yes, we can. Yes, we can.
It's time. And yeah, it's momentum. But you know what? I think it's momentum. I really think it's going to drive people. And as we were saying the other day, people are going to expect a lot out of this guy, and I just hope he freaking well delivers.
But here's the interesting point. Once again, and we're saying this while
we're
looking...
Are you saying that ours weren't interesting?
No, here's another interesting point.
No, that's what you were saying.
No, I missed the word other. Here's another interesting point.
Okay, you say your thing, then I'll say something interesting.
Okay. There was a lot of commentary about, particularly from people like Pat Buchanan, who's a Republican commentator.
Ron Johnson.
Ron Johnson, exactly. Ann Coulter. All these people about saying that this is a watershed moment in American history. This is the tectonic shift that they haven't had since 1980, and before that, since 1964.
It's the discovery of the Ark.
It is. It's discovery of the... The Dead Sea Scrolls.
Exactly.
And the Rosetta Stone, all at once.
Yeah, all at once,
It is a tectonic shift in American politics, and that the rhetoric they use, and I think it's probably hyperbole, but the rhetoric they were using was the fact that this America will never be the same again. Mm. The problem is, for me, and we discussed this briefly last night, is the fact, and as they alluded to,
I never alluded to anything, I just say straight out.
He's got the weight of this massive expectation on his shoulders. He mobilised the African-American population to vote. He mobilised the youth population. 65% of the youth of America voted for Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a massive figure.
But he also set up his PYA.
Yeah,
by saying, you know, it's going to be a difficult task.
Yeah,
I'm not going to be a perfect president. I'm not going to solve all the problems.
Yeah,
you know, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going
and
to.
And it may not be in my first year or my
he
first.
Almost, he almost went through everything that he proposed. Yep. And said, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to.
He's
do
covering
this.
Himself. That's very true.
Of course he is.
But here's my point. We were discussing this in a break. There is the risk that at the end of this, say 4 year term. Let's talk about his first 4 year term. At the end of this, we're either going to say this guy.
Bring on Sarah Palin.
Yeah, what I was going to say, bring on Sarah Palin. We're going to say, this guy's really just been 4 more years of the same, the same divisive food fight, to quote Obama himself. Or we're going to say that he's been thwarted by, you know, the Washington insiders, thwarted by the corporations, tried, struggled hard, couldn't get anywhere. I'm just worried that... As you alluded to, while we're
I do a lot of alluding
while we're listening to
I
the speech,
it
certainly does.
That at the end of this, there is going to be so many people who will never vote again.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
He has to get it right.
He does. He does.
He really has to get it right. And you know that I wonder about this. You know, by having to get it right, it gives him the mandate to do what he needs to do.
Yeah.
Because it really does. Because the thing is, if he says, we're going to do this, the popular people behind him and the Republicans or a conservative Democratic Congress say no, all the young constituents are going to go, I'm never going to vote for you.
And here's the problem. He didn't win by in terms of the popular vote.
Yeah.
I mean, still, 49% of the American population voted for John McCain.
Mm-hmm.
So... all the mobilisation, all the youth, all the stuff you did to get them out there, if they don't vote again, you may be in for an era of Republican dominance that you can never break.
But the push to rework the voting system, to make it either voting on a holiday or to make it compulsory and all that sort of stuff, I think there's a momentum there as well.
I hope so.
So we may see in the next 4 years at least a dialogue about that at a proper level. So.
Yeah.
So, I think it's exciting. I really do. I think it's massively exciting. It's been a long 2 years.
Yep.
And hopefully it'll bring wonderful and great things. And just a couple of things just quickly. In 1619, the first African slaves landed in the English colony of Virginia. In 1969, which is 40 years ago this year, Martin Luther King was assassinated. And in 2008, Barack Obama... was elected the first African-American U.S. president.
I know, and as I said...
That's a pretty amazing trip when you think about it.
That is a stunning indictment of both the American dream, which they keep talking about, and the American system.
In between that, in the 1800s, we had a civil war.
Yes.
Did I say we?
1860, that's right.
Had a civil war.
1861 to 1865.
Basically, I mean, they can argue it's all about state control, but it wasn't. It was about race.
It was about slavery, yes.
Yeah.
It was. So ultimately, as far as I'm concerned, I agree that this is an epoch-making time, not just for the United States, but for the world, because America, in many ways, both culturally, politically, and economically, although that is diminishing, they have such a strong impact on the rest of the world. Now, the interesting thing is we'll be watching on this show, and if you want to then get back to our normal shows, of course, they'll be on the website, which is walkbyforest.org. We're going to be following... things such as the European election. And, of course, the thing about the European elections, which is really interesting, is that they are going far right.
Yeah.
Most of our states...
But maybe they won't. See, do you think that might change? I'm wondering whether the Obama thing is actually going to change things.
Thank you. And that was going to be my point. Currently, they're swinging right. You're finding that the Australian states are swinging right. Mm. Maybe this might be, and not a line from either of you, the finger in the dike. That stops the flow right.
Well, this is...
I
actually wonder whether this is going to give Kevin Rudd the permission to just do what he wants.
Well, he seems to be heading down that line.
He now sees a politician who has, you know, a great mandate from the people, as Kevin Rudd had a mandate from the people to come in and change fucking do it.
For working exactly right. families. That's so right. That, ladies and gentlemen, has been Double Penetration 08, our official online-only web version special something or other. Well, Richard's giving me the double extra action finger. And now, for the last time this evening, we're going to cross over to the newsroom.
US election 2008 update.
Ladies and gentlemen, the newsroom on the Fox News website, and if you take the live feed from Fox News, it's just black. There's nothing there. It just says normal service will be resumed.
Is that because the screensaver kicked in because there was no update?
That could have been. No, I was actually going to say it just says normal service will be resumed in 4 years.
In 4 years.
So that, ladies and gentlemen, is the last update from the night. Thank you very much for listening to this very show. That has been Welcome Back Forest Election Special 08 Double Penetration. Thank you very much to our guest host who's popped in and out at various points during the show.
Mr. Pig.
Matthew Thomas Curley, the host of a radio show on 2RRR, which you can't listen to because it's not being streamed.
Uh-huh.
So bad luck.
Now, coming up now, probably you won't hear Barack Obama's acceptance speech in its entirety. As Richard said, it's around about 17 minutes long, so it's unlikely you will. You'll hear highlights. We are now going to play to you the full 17 minutes, so you can actually work out what he had to say, make up your own mind, feel energised, don't feel energised, whatever.
Yep.
So we're going to present that to you now.
Yep, so that'll be on our website. And, of course, don't forget to download the continuing shows back next week with normal, once again, our normal service will resume, I'll resume in probably 4 years' time as well.
Yes, and on next week's show,
We'll get back to you.
Yeah, it'll come. Don't worry.
But first, here's John McCain.
Thank you for coming here on this beautiful Arizona evening. My friends, we have come to the end of a long journey. The American people have spoken, and they have spoken clearly. A little while ago, I had the honor of calling Senator Barack Obama to congratulate him. To congratulate him on being elected the next president of the country that we both love. In a contest as long and difficult as this campaign has been, his success alone commands my respect for his ability and perseverance. But that he managed to do so by inspiring the hopes of so many millions of Americans who had once wrongly believed that they had little at stake or little influence in the election of an American president is something I deeply admire and commend him for achieving. This is an historic election, and I recognize the special significance it has for African Americans and for the special pride that must be theirs tonight. I've always believed that America offers opportunities to all who have the industry and will to seize it. Senator Obama believes that too. But we both recognize that though we have come a long way from the old injustices that once stained our nation's reputation and denied some Americans the full blessings of American citizenship, the memory of them still had the power to wound. A century ago, President Theodore Roosevelt's invitation of Booker T. Washington to dine at the White House was taken as an outrage in many quarters. America today is a world away from the cruel and prideful bigotry of that time. There is no better evidence of this than the election of an African American to the presidency of the United States. Let there be no reason now. Let there be no reason now for any American to fail to cherish their citizenship in this, the greatest nation on earth. Senator Obama has achieved a great thing for himself and for his country. I applaud him for it and offer him my sincere sympathy that his beloved grandmother did not live to see this day. Though our faith assures us she is at rest in the presence of her Creator and so very proud of the good man she helped raise. Senator Obama and I have had and argued our differences, and he has prevailed. No doubt many of those differences remain. These are difficult times for our country, and I pledge to him tonight to do all in my power to help him lead us through the many challenges we face. I urge all Americans. I urge all Americans who supported me to join me in not just congratulating him, but offering our next president our goodwill and earnest effort to find ways to come together, to find the necessary compromises to bridge our differences and help restore our prosperity, defend our security in a dangerous world, and leave our children and grandchildren a stronger, better country than we inherited. Whatever our differences, we are fellow Americans, and please believe me when I say no association has ever meant more to me than that. It is natural. It's natural tonight to feel some disappointment, but tomorrow we must move beyond it and work together to get our country moving again. We fought as hard as we could. And though we fell short, the failure is mine, not yours. I am so deeply grateful to all of you for the great honor of your support and for all you have done for me. I wish the outcome had been different, my friends. The road was a difficult one from the outset, but your support and friendship never wavered. I cannot adequately express how deeply indebted I am to you. I am especially grateful to my wife, Cindy, my children, my dear mother, and all my family, and to the many old and dear friends who have stood by my side through the many ups and downs of this long campaign. I have always been a fortunate man, and never more so for the love and encouragement you have given me. You know, campaigns are often harder on a candidate's family than on the candidate, and that's been true in this campaign. All I can offer in compensation is my love and gratitude and the promise of more peaceful years ahead. I am also, of course, very thankful to Governor Sarah Palin, one of the best campaigners I've ever seen. One of the best campaigners I have ever seen, and an impressive new voice in our party for reform and the principles that have always been our greatest strength. Her husband, Todd, and their five beautiful children, for their tireless dedication to our cause and the courage and grace they showed in the rough and tumble of a presidential campaign. We can all look forward with great interest to her future service to Alaska, the Republican Party, and our country. To all my campaign comrades, from Rick Davis and Steve Schmidt and Mark Salter, to every last volunteer who fought so hard and valiantly month after month in what at times seemed to be the most challenged campaign in modern times. Thank you so much. A lost election will never mean more to me and the privilege of your faith and friendship. I don't know what more we could have done to try to win this election. I'll leave that to others to determine. Every candidate makes mistakes, and I'm sure I made my share of them. But I won't spend a moment of the future regretting what might have been. This campaign was and will remain the great honor of my life. And my heart is filled with nothing but gratitude for the experience and to the American people for giving me a fair hearing before deciding that Senator Obama and my old friend, Senator Joe Biden, should have the honor of leading us for the next 4 years. Please, please. I would not be an American worthy of the name should I regret a fate that has allowed me the extraordinary privilege of serving this country for a half a century. Today, I was a candidate for the highest office in the country I love so much. And tonight, I remain her servant. That is blessing enough for anyone, and I thank the people of Arizona for it. Tonight, more than any night, I hold in my heart nothing but love for this country and for all its citizens. Whether they supported me or Senator Obama, I wish Godspeed to the man who was my former opponent and will be my president. And I call on all Americans, as I have often in this campaign, to not despair of our present difficulties, but to believe always in the promise and greatness of America, because nothing is inevitable here. Americans never quit. We never surrender. We never hide from history. We make history. Thank you, and God bless you, and God bless America. Thank you all very much.
Hello, Chicago. If there is anyone out there who still doubts that America is a place where all things are possible, who still wonders if the dream of our founders is alive in our time, who still questions the power of our democracy, tonight is your answer. It's the answer told by lines that stretched around schools and churches in numbers this nation has never seen. By people who waited 3 hours and 4 hours, many for the first time in their lives, because they believed that this time must be different, that their voices could be that difference. It's the answer spoken by young and old, rich and poor, Democrat and Republican, black, white, Hispanic, Asian, Native American, gay, straight, disabled and not disabled, Americans who sent a message to the world that we have never been just a collection of individuals or a collection of red states and blue states. We are and always will be the United States of America. It's the answer that led those who've been told for so long by so many to be cynical and fearful and doubtful about what we can achieve, to put their hands on the arc of history and bend it once more toward the hope of a better day. It's been a long time coming, but tonight, because of what we did on this day, in this election, at this defining moment, change has come to America. A little bit earlier this evening, I received an extraordinarily gracious call from Senator McCain. Senator McCain fought long and hard in this campaign, and he's fought even longer and harder for the country that he loves. He has endured sacrifices for America that most of us cannot begin to imagine. We are better off for the service rendered by this brave and selfless leader. I congratulate him. I congratulate Governor Palin for all that they've achieved. And I look forward to working with them to renew this nation's promise in the months ahead. I want to thank my partner in this journey, a man who campaigned from his heart and spoke for the men and women he grew up with on the streets of Scranton and rode with on the train home to Delaware, the Vice President-elect of the United States, Joe Biden. And I would not be standing here tonight without the unyielding support of my best friend for the last 16 years, the rock of our family, the love of my life, the nation's next First Lady, Michelle Obama. Sasha and Malia, I love you both more than you can imagine. And you have earned the new puppy that's coming with us to the White House. And while she's no longer with us, I know my grandmother's watching, along with the family that made me who I am. I miss them tonight. I know that my debt to them is beyond measure. To my sister Maya, my sister Alma, all my other brothers and sisters, thank you so much for all the support that you've given me. I am grateful to them. To my campaign manager, David Plouffe. The unsung hero of this campaign, who built the best political campaign, I think, in the history of the United States of America. To my chief strategist, David Axelrod, who's been a partner with me every step of the way. To the best campaign team ever assembled in the history of politics, you made this happen, and I am forever grateful for what you've sacrificed to get it done. But above all, I will never forget who this victory truly belongs to. It belongs to you. It belongs to you. I was never the likeliest candidate for this office. We didn't start with much money or many endorsements. Our campaign was not hatched in the halls of Washington. It began in the backyards of Des Moines, in the living rooms of Concord, and the front porches of Charleston. It was built by working men and women who dug into what little savings they had to give $5 and $10 and $20 to the cause. It grew strength from the young people who rejected the myth of their generation's apathy, who left their homes and their families for jobs that offered little pay and less sleep. It drew strength from the not-so-young people who braved the bitter cold and scorching heat to knock on doors of perfect strangers, and from the millions of Americans who volunteered and organized and proved that more than two centuries later, a government of the people, by the people, and for the people has not perished from the earth. This is your victory. Now, I know you didn't do this just to win an election. I know you didn't do it for me. You did it because you understand the enormity of the task that lies ahead. For even as we celebrate tonight, we know the challenges that tomorrow will bring are the greatest of our lifetime. Two wars, a planet in peril, the worst financial crisis in a century. Even as we stand here tonight, we know there are brave Americans waking up in the deserts of Iraq and the mountains of Afghanistan to risk their lives for us. There are mothers and fathers who will lie awake after their children fall asleep and wonder how they'll make the mortgage, or pay their doctor's bills, or save enough for their child's college education. There's new energy to harness, new jobs to be created, new schools to build, and threats to meet, alliances to repair. The road ahead will be long. Our climb will be steep. We may not get there in 1 year or even in one term. But America, I have never been more hopeful than I am tonight that we will get there. I promise you, we as a people will get there. There will be setbacks and false starts. There are many who won't agree with every decision or policy I make as president. And we know the government can't solve every problem. But I will always be honest with you about the challenges we face. I will listen to you, especially when we disagree. And above all, I will ask you to join in the work of remaking this nation the only way it's been done in America for 221 years, block by block, brick by brick, calloused hand by calloused hand. What began 21 months ago in the depths of winter cannot end on this autumn night. This victory alone is not the change we seek. It is only the chance for us to make that change. And that cannot happen if we go back to the way things were. It can't happen without you, without a new spirit of service, a new spirit of sacrifice. So let us summon a new spirit of patriotism, of responsibility, where each of us resolves to pitch in and work harder and look after not only ourselves, but each other. Let us remember that if this financial crisis taught us anything, it's that we cannot have a thriving Wall Street while Main Street suffers. In this country, we rise or fall as one nation, as one people. Let's resist the temptation to fall back on the same partisanship and pettiness and immaturity that has poisoned our politics for so long. Let's remember that it was a man from this state who first carried the banner of the Republican Party to the White House, a party founded on the values of self-reliance and individual liberty and national unity. Those are values that we all share. And while the Democratic Party has won a great victory tonight, we do so with a measure of humility and determination to heal the divides that have held back our progress. As Lincoln said to a nation far more divided than ours, we are not enemies, but friends. Though passion may have strained, it must not break our bonds of affection. And to those Americans whose support I have yet to earn, I may not have won your vote tonight, but I hear your voices. I need your help, and I will be your president too. And all those watching tonight from beyond our shores, from parliaments and palaces, to those who are huddled around radios in the forgotten corners of the world, our stories are singular, but our destiny is shared. And a new dawn of American leadership is at hand. To those who would tear the world down, we will defeat you. To those who seek peace and security, we support you. And to all those who have wondered if America's beacon still burns as bright. Tonight we proved once more that the true strength of our nation comes not from the might of our arms or the scale of our wealth, but from the enduring power of our ideals, democracy, liberty, opportunity, and unyielding hope. That's the true genius of America, that America can change. Our union can be perfected. What we've already achieved gives us hope for what we can and must achieve tomorrow. This election had many firsts and many stories that will be told for generations, but one that's on my mind tonight is about a woman who cast her ballot in Atlanta. She is a lot like the millions of others who stood in line to make their voice heard in this election, except for one thing. Ann Nixon Cooper is 106 years old. She was born just a generation past slavery, a time when there were no cars on the road or planes in the sky, when someone like her couldn't vote for two reasons, because she was a woman and because of the color of her skin. And tonight, I think about all that she's seen throughout her century in America, the heartache and the hope, the struggle and the progress, the times we were told that we can't, and the people who pressed on with that American creed, yes, we can. At a time when women's voices were silenced and their hopes dismissed, she lived to see them stand up and speak out and reach for the ballot. Yes, we can. When there was despair in the Dust Bowl and depression across the land, she saw a nation conquer fear itself with a new deal, new jobs, a new sense of common purpose. Yes, we can. When the bombs fell on our harbor and tyranny threatened the world, she was there to witness a generation rise to greatness and a democracy was saved. Yes, we can. She was there for the buses in Montgomery, the hoses in Birmingham, a bridge in Selma, and a preacher from Atlanta who told the people that we shall overcome. Yes, we can. A man touched down on the moon. A wall came down in Berlin. A world was connected by our own science and imagination. And this year, in this election, she touched her finger to a screen and cast her vote. Because after 106 years in America, through the best of times and the darkest of hours, she knows how America can change. Yes, we can. America, we have come so far. We have seen so much, but there's so much more to do. So tonight, let us ask ourselves, if our children should live to see the next century, if my daughters should be so lucky to live as long as Ann Nixon Cooper, what change will they see? What progress will we have made? This is our chance to answer that call. This is our moment. This is our time to put our people back to work and open doors of opportunity for our kids, to restore prosperity and promote the cause of peace, to reclaim the American dream and reaffirm that fundamental truth that out of many we are one, that while we breathe, we hope, and where we are met with cynicism and doubt and those who tell us that we can't, we will respond with that timeless creed that sums up the spirit of a people. Yes, we can. Thank you. God bless you. And may God bless the United States of America.